Schools around the country are now largely back in person for class. But there's been a jump in the number of students quarantined, and some places are allowing distance learning again. All too often, parents are facing difficult choices. Stephanie Tsai has the story of an economist who is trying to help parents navigate.
Amid the chaos of life with young kids, parents face an endless stream of decisions.
What we let them watch, what we let them eat, what we let them, you know, do.
And the pandemic posed new challenges.
What are their interests outside of technology? I don't really know anymore.
We kind of joked over the summer that she's going to have to learn how to be social again.
Enter parenting guru to the data-obsessed millennial mom, Emily Oster, an economist by training. Her new book, The Family Firm, employs business strategy for parenting choices. Start with the big picture, she says.
You know, write down what are the three top priorities for your family. That's like a very simple thing that can potentially sort of be moving you forward.
For the most important decisions, Oster suggests the four Fs.
The idea is to start by articulating exactly what your question is.
Frame the question. That's the first F.
Frame the question. Think about what your concrete options you're trading off. Second thing is what I call fact finding. And some of that is about collecting data, but it's also about kind of collecting the information your family needs about the logistics around those choices.
Kenetta Sanford's big question, whether to move so that her daughter could attend a smaller public school.
I really wanted her to be in a place where she would have the support that she needed. So is there a better school environment that we could put her in?
Fact-finding included weighing the benefits to her daughter of both choices.
Thinking about, you know, what are some of the opportunities that one might have in a bigger school district? You know, do they offer more sports? Do they offer more classes? Things like that. But I do think that the school district that we are in now, where the schools are smaller, class sizes are smaller, really is conducive to her learning.
Oster's third F is to make that final decision. The fourth F, follow up.
Talk about this again in a year, in 3 months, whatever it is, and see if we want to make a different choice.
In the book, Oster looks at data studies about fraught issues like school choice and what to feed your kids. But unlike for toddlers and babies, the research provides less obvious answers for school-aged children. In a few areas, data is clear, however. Sleep is one of them.
Even relatively small manipulations of sleep can matter for kids' behavior and for their sort of memory and cognition. So we've done experiments where they just reduce sleep for like 4 days by an hour. So it's small.
And it made a huge difference.
And it makes a huge difference.
Negative difference.
A huge negative difference. And the other thing is that when kids watch screens for the hour before bed, that is not good for their sleep.
But is all screen time bad? Janelle Spence has five sons.
When my oldest child was an only child, he didn't watch a television until he was after 2 years. I was in the hospital delivering my second son before my parents ever put him in front of a TV. I was like really like, oh my God, TV is so bad. That's what all the experts say. And then like as I had more kids, it was just impossible to keep them away from the television. As that kind of happened, I'm like, well, I don't know why is it really so bad?
It's a question many parents have grappled with, especially during COVID lockdowns.
Every day is kind of a constant struggle of when do I get my iPad? When do I get to watch television? Can I turn on YouTube?
B, do you have a two?
Carrie Peterson has three kids.
We've all been inside together for the past 18 months, you know, trying to keep one of them quiet while the other one is on a Zoom call, things like that. I've definitely been handing them a device more often than I would like.
Oster says the data offers one simple central insight.
When your kid is watching screens, they're not doing something else.
Right.
And that is the reason to limit screens. But also most of what maybe people think they know about, you know, violent video games make your kids violent. Yeah, that literature is not very good. There isn't a lot of reason to think that the content per se is problematic. And I think it's become much harder in the pandemic. We're all trying to work from home and have a job and like everybody's kids use a lot more screens. And I think one way to think about that is the choices there felt very much like it's screens or it's me yelling at you. Right. To get out of my office.
Which is not good for kids.
Which is also not good for kids, right? And so I think it's much better. Screens are better than me yelling at you. This was the best use of time under those constraints.
Again, it's about the big picture. Carrie Peterson has encouraged her kids to play sports to get them away from screens.
We try to keep them active. It's a balance between how many evenings a week do I want to spend shuttling kids to different activities versus how else am I going to fill the time in the evening when they're at home. If they're just sitting at home, are they going to just be begging for an iPod?
For Janelle Spence, the decision to let her son do travel baseball was a no-brainer, despite juggling four other kids.
He loves it. It's more of a decision of how are we going to get him there, rather than is he going to play.
What does that mean for the family, though?
It means a lot of days at the ball field.
Kaneta Sanford's daughter plans to do Lego League in addition to the running group she joined during the pandemic.
It was really about getting her to connect with some kids outside of her school day where they're on video all day long.
That's a key reason to join activities, says Oster.
Some people think about extracurriculars as like a way to like achieve, you know, or like they're a path into college.
Enrichment of some nature.
But in fact, when you like look at the literature, the big benefit to extracurriculars are this kind of sense of belonging.
But as the Delta variant causes COVID cases to surge, decisions about extracurricular activities are again taking a back seat, especially for parents of children under 12 who can't get vaccinated.
Great to have you.
As a new school year begins, COVID is top of mind for Kaneta Sanford.
Will we be able to stay in school the whole entire year?
Carrie Peterson is optimistic about her children's return.
We are pretty confident that our kids will be safe in school, and also the fact that they just really need to get into some kind of a routine.
As kids return to the classroom, Oster thinks mitigation measures will be key.
We saw schools operate safely last year with masks, with ventilation, you know, with teacher vaccinations by the end of the year, with some testing. And I think those are all the kinds of things we want to be layering in. And I think we've increasingly learned how important in-person school is, and that really pushes in the direction of making it happen for everybody.
Throughout the pandemic, Oster collected data on schools and COVID. Many parents turned to her for information, but she also faced backlash for arguing against school closures last fall.
It's a policy intervention that's really, really costly for kids and families, and doesn't seem to have a lot of public health benefits.
I've tried to be thoughtful about this. You know, I believe that what I'm saying is reflecting the best evidence that we have, but boy, wouldn't it be better if there was a more concerted, centralized effort to collect some of this information.
And in your case, it led to a lot of scrutiny and even criticism of people saying, Emily Oster is an economist. She is not an epidemiologist. She's not a public health expert or a public education expert. How did that land with you?
In the space of COVID and schools and trading off risks and benefits and thinking about data, you know, those are things that I am trained in. In the space of commenting on COVID in schools, most of this time I was running the database with the most data on that. And so it felt like, you know, I, on the one hand, I'm not an epidemiologist, but the idea of bringing additional perspectives, I think, is very valuable. And I'm not sure that we should say that our decisions will be made best if we listen to only one kind of expertise.
The issues parents face these days are complex, but Oster believes different perspectives and data can help them make their own best decisions. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm Stephanie Tsai in Providence, Rhode Island.